It's the dictionary.
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 It's the dictionary. Hello, word nerds.
Hey, word nerds, what's up with you? Oh, it is August 4th, 2023, 7:05 a.m. I'm in my work office. Hey, everybody, how you doing? Happy Friday to me and you. Let's do the pluggy things here at the beginning. You can email me if you want to get a hold of me in any way, the email way, it's the only way, dictionarypod@gmail.com. If you want to follow me on social media, it is at dictionarypod on Instagram and X and Threads. Who knows if X and Threads are even going to survive any of this? And what's with the other things? There's this blue sky and mammoth or whatever the hell they're called. I don't know. Social media is a weird, weird world. And then there's a Facebook page. Everybody says it's only grandparents that are on Facebook, but we know that that's not true. But yes, I'm still on Facebook. The Dictionary. You can go find it on Facebook if you want to do that. You can follow this show, subscribe to it on whatever podcast platform thing you like. Make sure you get those automatic downloads if you're the downloading kind of person. Subscribe, share it, please share it. Tell everybody about it. What else? Rate and review. If you got the Apple Podcasts or any other podcast thing that does the rating and the reviewing, please go do that. It would make me feel great. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel. I've been a bit better about putting up some regular, not regular, just I'm just trying to put some more videos up there. So go subscribe to that to find some silly videos. What are the other things? You can join the Patreon if you want to give me a little bit of money every month. $1 a month gets you very early episodes. Ooh, that reminds me. I need to start posting those because in 3 days from now, the first episode of The Ease is going to post for the public. It's already been up on Patreon for months, a long time, so I got to start getting the rest of the episodes up there. This is all airing. It doesn't matter to you. Why am I talking about something that's in the past for you? But yeah, I got to get going on that. What else? Patreon, merchandise. There's a Tee Public link in the show notes. If you want to buy some merchandise, there is a Google Voice number in the show notes. You can call it and leave a message and tell me if it's okay for me to put it in the show, in an episode, a future episode. I would love to do that. That would be great. If you got a joke, come up with a joke for any word through the end of the alphabet. Send me a joke through email, only email, please. And then I will save it and I will say your joke and credit you when I get there. All right, we got a bunch of words in this episode because I moved a couple of them from the previous episode to this episode. So, oh, and then on Patreon, if you want to see video of this, whatever this is, $5 a month on the Patreon, you can see videos of all this. I don't know how interesting it would be, but I think it adds another level. I try and look at the camera a lot. I do a lot of hand motions and facial reactions and things like that. No props yet. We'll see. Maybe costumes and wigs someday. We'll see. All right. The first word in this episode is the first form of the word Egyptian. This is a short E-G-Y section. Egyptian is spelled capital E-G-Y-P-T-I-A-N. And I remember seventh or eighth grade, we were studying Egypt in our social studies class or whatever it was called. And I just remember thinking that when you write it, especially in cursive, but even regular, there are three letters in a row that all go under the line, the G, the Y, the P. I don't know why I noticed that, but it's an interesting word. The Y is a vowel in that case, but it just feels very consonant heavy. Okay, Egyptian, adjective from the 14th century, of, relating to, or characteristic of Egypt or the Egyptians. That's Egyptian. Are you talking about an Egyptian person? Then it is Egyptian. Oh, I gotta come up with a sound effect. To be honest, all these Egyptian words. Well, actually, should we do that? Should we do that? Let's see. Is there an Egyptian sound effect that I can make that would not be offensive in any way? I can't even think of one. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, but that doesn't seem like a great one to do. I'm gonna do meh, because I like that word, that phrase, and it might be connected to something later. Okay. The second, if you don't know, the sound effect says that word is done. Here comes the next word, and here comes the next word. The second form of Egyptian is a noun from the 14th century. One, a native or inhabitant of Egypt. Two, the Afro-Asiatic language of the ancient Egyptians from earliest times to about the 3rd century AD. That phrase, the earliest times, is very vague. What does that even mean? Well, it probably means the earliest times of the Egyptian language, whenever that was invented. It doesn't say a BC time, BCE, whatever we're using now. So from the beginning of Egypt up until the 3rd century AD, so that would be the 200s, and that would be, you know, right now we're in 2023, so that was about 1800 years ago, 1,800 years ago, give or take. So does that mean that the Egyptian language, this Afro-Asiatic language, oh, so it's specifically talking about the ancient Egyptian. So what happened in the 3rd century AD that, does that have a different name? I don't know. Let's see if number three has something to do with that. But it is interesting. Like, do they not speak Egyptian now? What do they speak? I would think it would be Egyptian. I don't know. Number three, this one is often not capitalized. This is a typeface having little contrast between thick and thin strokes and squared serifs. Okay, this is a font? I don't know if I can think in my head, imagine in my head what this font is. So I'm going to do a quick little Google search. Okay, interesting. So I'll maybe post a picture on social media of this. That wasn't helpful at all. That's just a whole bunch of fonts that are sort of related to Egypt in some way. There is this one font, though, that is, so what is the description? There's little contrast between thick and thin strokes and squared serifs. So this one font I found, maybe it is, it basically just looks like it's all made up of rectangles. So like the A is just a big block this way, and then this way, and then this way, and then there's not a lot of, I don't know, it's just sort of like a bunch of blocks sort of dropped together to create these very sort of squared off letters. I don't know if that's the one they're talking about. I might need to do a little bit of extra digging, but I think that might be it. Yeah, it's very line based, I guess. So I guess that's the Egyptian font. Yeah. Back to the language, Afro-Asiatic language. So Egypt is in Africa, so that seems like that's where the Afro part comes in. Asiatic, well, Egypt is in the northeast part of Africa, so it's very close to the Middle East area, which is, you know, in that sort of Asiatic continent. I mean, it's probably technically on Asia, I would guess. Yeah, it must be. So that's the sort of region of Egypt. What to say about Egypt? I never studied Egypt, really. We did do a whole section, like I said, in my social studies class in junior high. We got to learn a lot. We got to learn about, you know, of course, the things that stick out to a 12-year-old is 12 or 13-year-old is, you know, when they were getting a body ready for mummification, they would pull out all the organs, they would pull out the brain through the nose with a long hook tool, And that, of course, that just blew all of our minds wide open. Whoa, this is what? How? Crazy. They were very smart. They were doing science thousands of years ago, things that, you know, I think the rest of the world learned about later. They were building the pyramids in this very smart scientific way. Am I correct? I heard that when the pyramids were being built, mammoths were still roaming the earth. Is that true? I don't know. Might have to look that up, but I feel like I've heard that that's true. What else about Egypt? We are fascinated by it because why? Because they had this culture so many thousands of years ago, and they were doing the mummification of the pyramids, and they had all these interesting things, and their language, the hieroglyphics, is this sort of really interesting, fascinating way to put language on these tablets. I mean, how people figured out what those images mean is amazing. I never learned how to read it. I guess they probably did teach us some of them in junior high. Of course, I don't remember. But yeah, it's a fascinating culture. And, you know, you can go to museums. The Field Museum in Chicago has a whole Egypt section. You can go see the mummies. They have mummified animals like cats and alligators and other things. You know, they would hide the pharaohs and all of their wealth inside these caverns inside of the pyramids. They were hidden, so you couldn't find them. And then, of course, people had to go in and rob their graves and take all the stuff because, oh, greed, yay. Anyway, it's an interesting culture. Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about the details because I didn't really ever study it. But Egypt and all the Egyptian things. But we got some more Egyptian words. Meh. Sounds like I don't care about Egyptian words. That's not the case. It's just a sound effect. Okay, the next one is Egyptian alfalfa weevil. A fantastic combination of three words. Egyptian alfalfa weevil. Noun from 1943. An old world weevil. Try to say that 10 times fast. An old world weevil that is now a pest of alfalfa in Western North America. So they came from Egypt, and now they're over here in the Western North America. How did they get all the way over here? The species name is Hypera brunipensis. Brunipensis. Yeah, maybe if this looks interesting, I will post a picture on social media of the Egyptian alfalfa weevil. That little pest. Meh. Next is Egyptian clover. Two words. Noun from circa 1900. The synonym is berseem. B-E-R-S-E-E-M. I mean, do we need to go do a quick look back for berseem? Let's see. We found that page pretty fast, didn't we? What is berseem? Here we go. It is a succulent annual clover. Yep, in the Nile Valley. So that's the Nile, queen of the Nile in Egypt. I've never seen that Cleopatra movie from, what was it, the 50s maybe? I should watch that sometime. Meh. Egyptian cotton, two words, noun from 1877. A fine, long staple, there's a hyphen there, so it's one thing, a fine, long staple, often somewhat brownish cotton. A fine, long staple, often somewhat brownish cotton, grown chiefly in Egypt. That's it, Egyptian cotton. It's cotton in Egypt. Egyptian cotton. Meh. Next is Egyptology. Capital E-G-Y-P-T-O-L-O-G-Y. Noun from 1841. The study of Egyptian antiquities. There's a lot of those. There are so many things that people can study. Their whole jobs are Egyptology. I think there was an episode of Ologies, the podcast Ologies, where she had on somebody who was... It wasn't Egyptology, but I believe, if I remember correctly, it was bread. It was Egyptology bread making or something like that. Maybe I'm mixing things up, but I think that's what it was. I can't remember the specific phrase. Egyptological. Egyptological, that is an adjective. And Egyptologist is a noun. Okay. Okay, that was the end of the EGs. No more EG words. Now we have a short EH section. Meh. The first one is pronounced either A or E or A. The pronunciation guide says that it shows the letter A and then I in parentheses. So is that I? I don't know. It also does say here in italics, also with the letter H, preceding and or with nasalization. So I think you would say like A? A? I don't know. I'm not entirely sure what it's trying to tell me there. This is an interjection from the 13th century. I mean, yeah, when I see E-H, that's what it is, E-H, I would just say eh. But not always. So this is used to ask for confirmation or repetition or to express inquiry. And it is used especially in Canadian English in anticipation of the listener's or reader's agreement. And so, you know, this is A. That's how it's usually pronounced in this context. And I think that's where that pronunciation is, that A with the I, A. So yes, you hear a lot of Canadians say something, 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 A. It sounds like there's a question mark at the end. I am here in anticipation of your agreement, the listener's agreement. Did you hear what I said? Do you agree with what I say, A? I wonder what the history, the cultural history of that is. Where did that come from? Was it just one person who said that all the time and then it just spread through the land? I don't know. So yeah, used to ask for confirmation or repetition. Like, oh, okay, so confirmation, A, did you hear what I said? You confirm what I said? Or repetition, so can you please repeat that? What did you say, A, maybe? Or to express inquiry. Inquiry, I am asking about something, A. I don't think I'm going to add this to my vocabulary, but I like that it exists very much. A? Yeah, A. And of course, the first pronunciation just says a long A. That's what it is, A. But then the AI, I don't know about that one. It says it's from Middle English, spelled E-Y, so maybe that's also A. So yeah, this goes back a ways, A, from the 13th century. Should I change my sound effect to that? Maybe I should. A? Next is EHF, abbreviation for extremely high frequency. This podcast has an EHF of episodes. There, it's a high frequency. Up until the E's, it was every day of the week, and now it's 5 days a week. Extremely high frequency. I don't think that's what we're talking about. It's probably like, you know, sound, some sort of vibration has a very high frequency. A? Next, we're getting into some really fun pronunciation words here. This one is ehrlichiosis. Yes, ehrlichiosis. Ehrlichiosis. Noun from 1965. The plural is ehrlichioses. Ehrlichioses. So this is an infection with or disease caused by tick-borne bacteria. You gotta be careful when you're in areas that have ticks. I was just one of my coworkers just said that they love insects, but they have a huge fear of ticks. And you know they're spreading things like Lyme disease. This thing, ehrlichiosis, doesn't sound good. I don't want it. And so, yeah, if you're going out in nature especially, watch out for the ticks. This is from the genus Ehrlichia, and they are of the family Anaplasmatisi. I just like to say sounds funny. Okay, Anaplasmatacei. I'm just going to say that's correct. Let's see. This is from Ehrlichia. That is the bacteria genus, as we said. But there was somebody who named this. Somebody got to name this. It is Paul Ehrlich. Ehrlich. So this whole thing is from this dude, Paul. Paul Ehrlich. Doesn't say who he was, what he was doing, when he lived, but I would assume he lived in the 20th century. Maybe he's still alive. I don't know. Should we phone him up? Eh? Next is EHV, the last EH word, abbreviation for extra high voltage. We got some extra high voltage up in here. Eh? All right, here is our EI section, which is going to go for halfway through. So all of the next episode and halfway through the next one. I don't know why you need to know this. Okay, the first of the EI words is eicosanoid. 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 Noun from 1980, the year me was born. This is any of a class of compounds as the prostaglandins derived from polyunsaturated fatty acids and involved in cellular activity. And examples of these polyunsaturated fatty acids are arachidonic acid. I guess that's one of them. It's a bunch of compounds from these fatty acids, and they're involved in cellular activity. So the stuff, the cells in your body, this is somehow related to that. The name is from the prefix icosa. That's the first six letters. And that it means it's containing 20 atoms. 20 atoms, and that is from the Greek icosa, which means 20. And so icosa, it just means 20. So if you see that, it means 20 in some way. But specifically here, it's got 20 atoms, and then there's the noic suffix, that's kind of it. There's more at the word vigesimal. Vigesimal, V-I-G-E-S-I-M-A-L, vigesimal. I don't know what that word is. Eicosanoid, yep. Okay, well, what's another word that might be related, possibly, maybe? Eh? This word is fun to say. Eicosapentaenoic acid. Eicosapentaenoic acid. Whew, that's a long word. E-I-C-O-S-A, that's the 20 prefix, and then we have P-E-N-T-A-E-N-O-I-C, eicosapentaenoic acid. It's an acid, noun from 1969, an omega-3 fatty acid, C20H30O2, found especially in fish oils. Let's see. I couldn't give you any more information than that. Now, if you are a chemistry person, you could probably figure out all the different parts of this word. I don't know what they mean, but I'll tell you. Of course, we have the icosa prefix, which means 20. That's probably the 20 carbons there. Then penta, that probably means 5. That's the next part of the word. And then ene. It's not a one-to-one, like they changed the spelling of these, but these are the different parts of the word that they took to make the final word. So icosa, penta, eni, E-N-E, and then oic, O-I-C, and that's the suffix that's used for like fatty acids. That's what the previous word said. And there's more, again, at the word vigesimal. Don't know what it is. Meh. Eh? Eh? I messed it up. The next word is eider. E-I-D-E-R. It looks like cider. Like I had some cider last night. But this one, instead of a C at the beginning, it's an E, but it is pronounced this essentially the same way. Eider. Cider, eider. Noun from 1743. One, any of several large northern sea ducks, yeah, like quack quack duck, having fine soft down that is used by the female for lining the nest. Whoa, interesting. It is called also eider duck. So, the female duck, I guess they take the down from their own body and fill the nest so it's nice and comfy for the little ducklings. I would guess that maybe some of the down just sort of comes off naturally and molting and stuff, or maybe when they're pregnant, their body knows to maybe release some of it. I have no idea, but I wouldn't be surprised if they pull it off themselves as well. So eider duck, large northern sea duck. Maybe I'll post a picture on social media. I don't know what they look like. Are they different looking than your standard duck? What is even a standard duck? I don't know. They are from the genera Somateria and also Palistica, something like that. Number two for eider is the number one definition for eiderdown, which is one word, which is our next word. But real quick, let's take a look at the etymology. This is so different than normal. It says Dutch, German, or Swedish from the Icelandic word eithur, A-E-T-H-U-R. You don't see a lot of Icelandic in here. They're the only ones. How did an Icelandic word get spread to Swedish, German, Dutch, English? Interesting. But it is from the Old Norse eithur. So I think Icelandic kind of came from Old Norse. That makes sense to me. And so is eithur, and then eider. And I guess that's it. I never heard of an eider duck, eh? The next word is eiderdown. Eiderdown, one word, noun from 1774. I think you can see where this is going. One, the down of the eider. Two, a comforter filled with eiderdown. I suspect that there are a lot of these in, Sweden, Iceland, that sort of region. That's probably where you get a lot of this eiderdown comforters. Number three, a soft, lightweight clothing fabric, knitted or woven and napped on one or both sides. And could it be made from eiderdown? I don't know. Maybe. I don't really know how the fabric-y things work. The etymology, you know, not much. German from eiderdown, Icelandic, eithardun, from eithor, which means, plus dun, which means down, and that is that for eiderdown. Eiderdown, eh? Next is eidetic. Eidetic, adjective from circa 1924, marked by or involving extraordinarily accurate and vivid recall, especially of visual images, as in, I never heard of this before, an eidetic memory. Could this be what we also call a photographic memory, where you see something and then you don't physically see it anymore, but you can see it in your mind? Mind? I don't know why I didn't say the D there. So this is interesting. I never heard of this word, eidetic, in terms of this extraordinarily accurate and vivid recall. So I don't think that I have this exactly. I don't think I have extraordinarily accurate or vivid recall, but there are certain things I feel like I've got a pretty good visual memory. I can sort of see things in my mind because I'm a much more of a visual person than like a wordy person, but definitely not eidetic. Eidetically is an adverb, and where does this word come from? It's from the Greek eidetikos, which means of a form. That's what it means, of a form, which is from eidos, which means form, and there's more at the word wise. So I guess if people had this type of memory, they were considered very wise because it was probably abnormal, sort of different from how everybody else could remember things. So, oh, you are smart. You've got this eidetic memory. How did you remember these things? You are so smart and wise. I don't know. The connection to of a form to having this type of memory, this recall, and of a form, is it like you remember the form? I don't really know what the connection is there, but I don't know. Something happened there. Eidetic. That's a good word to remember. Eh? Next is eidolon. E-I-D-O-L-O-N. Noun from 1828. 1. An unsubstantial image. The synonym is phantom. So I think of this as being like maybe a little transparent, a little ghostly, unsubstantial. So it's not super solid. There is no example of like how you would use this in context. It is a noun. So an eidolon, that's the word, right? Eidolon. An eidolon. Interesting. Number 2, the synonym is ideal. I-D-E-A-L, ideal. Yeah, no more context there, so I'm not entirely sure how you would use these in sentences. The first one, I guess, you'd say, I saw an eidolon over there. I saw this phantom, this shadow figure, maybe. I guess that's another word for that. Let's see, let's look at the etymology. I hope this is interesting. Not really. It's from the Greek eidolon. You can see a connection here. All these words are from Greek. And there's more at the word idol, I-D-O-L. So, I mean, I see the connection from a spelling and a pronunciation way. I'm trying to think of how you, well, ideal. I don't know. I think there's a lot more to this word than the book is saying. It's an interesting one. Eidolon. The plural, I just saw this, the plural could be eidolons with an S or eidola. You can change the O-N to an A, eidola. You got lots of idols, lots of unsubstantial images, lots of ideals, eidola. That's a good one. A? Next is eigenmode, E-I-G-E-N-M-O-D-E. One word, I'm going into my eigenmode. Noun from 1972. A normal mode of vibration of an oscillating system. Normal mode, that's what it is. Eigenmode, normal mode. But, you know, specifically in this context, we're talking about a system that oscillates. It rotates, it's repetitive, it's the same kind of thing over and over again. Like a fan oscillates. And it's the normal mode of vibration in that repeating oscillating system. Eigenmode. It's not beast mode, it's eigenmode. The etymology isn't very helpful, but we do have a couple of related words that might give us a bit more information, so let's read those. Eh? So next is eigenvalue. We're going to do all the eigen words here in this episode. Eigenvalue, one word, noun, from 1927, so eigenmode was 1972, eigenvalue was 1927, a good, 45 years? My brain and my math and my mouth weren't working well together. Okay, eigenvalue, a scalar. S-C-A-L-A-R, a scalar associated with a given linear transformation of a vector space and having the property that there is some non-zero vector which, when multiplied by the scalar, is equal to the vector obtained by letting the transformation operate on the vector. That's the end of the sentence. I hope I didn't skip any lines. Do we need to read this one again? It's like down far on the page. Hoi, yoi, yoi. Okay. A scalar associated with a given linear transformation of a vector space and having the property that there is some non-zero vector which, when multiplied by the scalar, is equal to the vector obtained by letting the transformation operate on the vector, especially a root of the characteristic equation of a matrix. And I don't know what that means. Ah, okay. It's math. Maybe I'll find a link, maybe Wikipedia or something, and put it in the show notes so you can learn more about eigenvalue. Where does this come from? Well, it is, looks like it's some sort of translation or something of the German Eigenwert, with a, that's a W, Eigenwert, which is from Eigen, I guess that's German, which means own, like my own, my precious, own, or peculiar, own or peculiar, plus wert, which means value. So it's own value, it's a peculiar value, I guess, I don't know, own and peculiar, that's a peculiar connection. I don't understand any of that, so we gotta go to our last word, yeah. It's the last word, eigenvector, one word, eigenvector, noun from 1941, so this one's right in the middle between eigenvalue and eigenmode. We got eigenvector, and of course, the eigenvalue definition mentioned vector multiple times. It is gonna be as complicated as the last one, just shorter. A non-zero vector that is mapped by a given linear transformation of a vector space onto a vector that is the product of a scalar multiplied by the original vector, called also characteristic vector. And I just can't help you out any more than that. I'm so, so sorry. Oh yes, this ended up being another long episode. So, what do we got to do? We got to pick a word of the episode. We had Egyptian, Egyptian, Egyptian alfalfa weevil, Egyptian clover, Egyptian cotton, Egyptology, A, EHF, Ehrlichiosis, EHV, eicosanoid, eicosapentaenoic acid, eider, eiderdown, eidetic, eidolon, eigenmode, eigenvalue, eigenvector. Ooh, I'm debating between a couple. You know, I do enjoy all the Egypt stuff. I think that's fascinating. It's a fascinating world and culture, but I never cared enough to study it. But I'm thinking about either A or eidetic. Well, I used A as my sound effect, so it got a lot of love. So I'm going to have to pick eidetic as the word of the episode. It's just a fascinating idea that people have such a good visual brain memory. They can see things in their brain so good. And I'm not at that level, but yeah, I think that's so cool. Okay. So like if somebody is describing something to me, like, oh, we went to this place, we met these people, we saw this movie, I need to see it. I need a visual memory. So like if I don't remember a movie, I need to start looking at photos of the movie. Oh yeah, I remember this. But like just the word, the title, the name of it isn't necessarily going to remind me of the whole movie. I'm such a visual person in that way. So I do like this word, eidetic. I don't have eidetic memory, but I can kind of see things when I close my eyes. Eidetic memory is really cool, but I don't have it totally. All right, that was fine. Let's quickly say another movie I watched, which is Laura. Oh, okay. It's another one. I remember seeing it. I can't visually see it, so I don't remember it at all. My note here, sometimes I write a little note. I said, any Twin Peaks fan? It's starting to come back. Yes. Okay. I do remember. Yep. I'm starting to get it. visually, this is from 1944, I think, and visually, it's beautiful. Black and white. There are certain moments when they just create this beautiful composition with the people and the things on the wall and the camera, the lighting, the shadows, and they just sort of sit there and they're like, look at this beautiful image, and then they move on. I distinctly remember that while watching the movie. So it's a good watch. I do believe that is possibly somewhat inspired, or it is somewhat an inspiration for Twin Peaks, the name at the very least. So yeah, go watch Laura from 1944. This is the end of the episode. Thank you very much for listening, and until next, possibly watching, until next time, this is Spencer dispensing information. Bye. Eh?